I would say right now, the only thing that you should be anxious about is anxious with excitement, because there's so many cool things you can do with the models. We're not really close at all to full automation of jobs. It's really just a positive tool. There is the phrase, you know, AI won't replace you, but people who know how to use AI will. Hello, new friends, and welcome. I'm Caitlin Sapier, and you're listening to AI and Anxious, where professionals spill their AI secrets and struggles. Today, we're sitting down with Will Mulholland, founder of Intelligent Marketer and fellow AI educator, who's on a mission to help marketing teams cut through AI hype and get real results. Through his weekly newsletter and training programs, he helps marketers at growth stage companies turn AI confusion into measurable wins, drawing from his experience as a product marketer driving $700 million in revenue at companies like eBay, KFC, and consulting startups. Will created the Results First AI Marketing Checklist, showing teams exactly how to implement AI safely and effectively. As a huge fan of KFC Nuggets myself, I'm keen to talk some AI shop with you, Will.
Really great to be here, Caitlin. Happy to talk about nuggets as well, but I think the biggest nugget is probably how much value we've got out of AI over the last few years.
I love that. What a great segue. Yeah, I mean, so the podcast is called AI and Anxious because a lot of people are anxious about what it means in terms of how AI is going to affect them and their role and their lives. I would say, you know, a lot of anxiety-inducing components of AI is, will this take my job, or will I be replaced with someone who knows AI better than me? Or on the other spectrum, when people are leaning a bit more towards the optimistic applications of AI, such as how can it enable, you know, certain opportunities that potentially they weren't able to achieve before, there's just a lot of stress and confusion and anxiety around this. So the aim of this podcast would be to help people feel a bit more at ease as to the actual AI landscape beyond all the hype and announcements that can be quite confusing for people. I'm keen to approach that angle of AI education. So immediately I'd like to just give an update of where everything is at the moment, basically in the past fortnight. So from my perspective, the best way to understand where AI is at and staying up to date is usually with the models that are available right now, their capabilities, and how you're able to improve your skills with different models. So there are thousands of models, but there are a few main players for the average professional, and the main players would be OpenAI, Anthropic, Meta, and Google. The latest models in the past 2 weeks that were released that are kind of like topping the AI model charts would be one from OpenAI, Gemini 2 from Google, ChatGPT Pro, which, yeah, I don't know if I want to talk about that, but that's fine, from OpenAI, Claude Sonnet 3.5 from Anthropic. So those are, I guess, the best models currently for most use cases. I personally use Claude as my main model. I don't really use ChatGPT that much, but...
Me too.
Yeah, which a lot of people are starting to do that as well. I would say overall, I mean, all the models have definitely improved in terms of speed and, you know, outcomes to a point, but I would probably say the current new model releases haven't necessarily unlocked any new professional use cases that weren't available before. It's just being able to do things probably slightly faster and get to better outputs faster, which obviously in and of itself is a great tool to use, but in terms of anxiety inducing things, probably not too bad. Though if you are aware, there's now computer use with Claude, so that just means that, well, this isn't really available to the end consumer, but developers have access to an API that means they can get Claude, the AI model, to be able to actually control their computer and be given certain tasks that it can complete end to end. Cool idea, obviously, but it's still very much in the early stages. It's very much in its infancy, and there's a lot of guard railing for that too. So it will often stop at anything requiring a username and password. So if you want to use the computer use for anything to do with any other platforms you're using, you won't be able to do that, which is most white collar professionals use cases. Like, do something in my Google Drive, use my email, do this, do that. Yeah, go into Salesforce, like use some sort of platform. And Claude will basically say, no, I can't do that. It can only use like a web browser without credentials. So it'll be interesting to see what happens next year with that, in terms of, you know, how autonomous agents are going to run. And that would be the first start. And that's something that I've advised quite a few professionals, that the year of the autonomous agents is going to be next year. But in saying that, you know, a lot of professionals probably aren't even getting the most out of the models themselves anyway, let alone being ready to control autonomous agents. So yeah, thoughts?
Yeah, I think, yeah, very excited for the next year of everything that's going to be happening with AI agents. I think you touched on it there, is people really need to learn how to set up the model to be able to behave the way they need it to be able to get the most out of it. So if you don't know how to prompt, if you don't have all of the data and context that you need to feed into the models, agents can go around and do different small tasks, but they're not going to do it exactly in the way you need it until you've carefully thought about how that needs to be set up for your use cases. So for particularly with marketers, if you're doing a competitive analysis and you want to scrape or copy different text across different websites of your competitors and then your own to then inform what your strengths, weaknesses, opportunities and threats are, you need to build in a framework or a prompt that's going to be able to give you the information you need and go through the right steps. Otherwise, you'll get something just generic that you wouldn't otherwise. I think the other thing you mentioned is, yeah, Claude 3.5 Sonnet is currently the best model that I recommend for writing and creative use cases. I also think it's just great at following instructions. So a lot of the issues that I run into with using some other models is they can kind of make up things generically and not follow the direct instructions that you've given. So I find that I can treat using Claude much more like I'm coding software, with creating a clear instruction and set of analysis that it goes through, and the results are generally a lot more consistent. I think O1 is really exciting in the ability that we're going to have. We have reasoning capabilities, so the idea that I can give a basic request and it will go through a thought process to actually improve the result. But currently, O1 just doesn't really cut it in terms of the results that you're getting compared to something like Claude that doesn't necessarily go through those reasoning processes. So yeah, the future of reasoning models is really exciting. But yeah, playing around with them is, And then the last is probably, you mentioned computer use. Haven't used that much myself. It seems pretty experimental, but one thing that I have got value out that Anthropic launched recently is MCP, which is basically an agent system that you can install onto your desktop Claude app, which can run through and use APIs to perform different actions. So previously Claude had no access to the internet, but now you can hook it up to Brave Search and actually get it to search the internet, go through, similar to how Perplexity or ChatGPT searches the internet, and pull together additional info and research into your response. I think that's really exciting because particularly the demos that Claude and Anthropic have been sharing, you basically just put a list of steps that you want it to go through and it will follow and perform those actions, which is something that you've never been able to do before. As easily as you have with something like MCP. So that's a few comments and thoughts.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I agree it is still experimental, but that's why I think, you know, you'd be quite like an early adopter and you'd be on the front foot, particularly as a professional, if you start to think about how you could use these tools beyond just using the, you know, the text-to-text user interface and like daisy chaining tasks together is when you'll start seeing some pretty interesting stuff. Just trying to think of some things that I did recently. I mean, I often use AI agents to do calls for me. I do that a lot. I don't really like talking to people on the phone.
Are you an agent now, or is this the real
you? No, yeah, I am. am. This is the real me for now. But yeah, I do like calling the ATO and going through that process is amazing, not having to sit on hold. And they'll probably report me or block me at some point. But for now, I've saved 2 hours of my life, you know? And then, yeah, the computer control. I know it's like a silly use case, but I got it to book some movie tickets for me and some friends for Gladiator 2. And yeah, I just use it for random administrative tasks. And again, it has to just be very prescriptive. Like, I have to be able to describe basically to like a 6-year-old how to complete the task. Like, you need to get to that level of granularity or it will get stuck right now. But that's similar to where we were with GPT, you know, 2 back in the day in 2020. Yeah, just the outputs weren't that great, but the jump from 3.5 to 4 was quite significant. And so I'm sure we'll see the same with the agents being able to, yeah, have a more independent ability to reason and complete tasks instead of having to be like very, very prescriptive. And even now you still need to be very prescriptive in prompts and give just mega amounts of detail to get it to do what you need it to do.
And I think that's a really interesting lesson for most people when they're just getting started with AI, is thinking that AI can solve their problems for them. Not necessarily. Mm. You need to give it the framework or an SOP or standard operating procedure of how you do things to teach it how to do that. Because one thing that AI is great at is following steps and following directions sometimes. But it's so the key use case that I'd start recommend to everyone when they're just getting started is think about what you do carefully, step to step, and write that down in a document. Record yourself explaining the steps that you go through to get something done, and just start building a bit of a database or at least a Google Doc of just all of those things that you do as if you were about to train a new member of your team.
Because, or train a robot. Like, think about the robotic clone of you. What would it need to do? Get down to that level. Like, I think, it's easy to stay at a high level, but actually take a task and then break it down into subtasks. Like, what do you actually have to do to complete a task? And often there's like 20 tasks nestled within one, you know? So,
yeah. And don't give the model too many things at once. Take time. Don't overload your prompts. And because often I find that's when it gets confused. And if maybe you give it a whole document and you ask it to edit one small section, make sure you're very specific about the one section you want to edit versus asking it to edit the whole doc. And yeah, just thinking about things and breaking them down into smaller steps. The models will get better, but at least for now, really thinking about those and working through those step by step, you're going to get much better results.
Yeah, definitely. I think I agree that I think prompt engineering, you know, becomes less and less of a required skill as the models increase and with their ability to reason. However, you still need to be able to communicate effectively to a model. I think it'll just be that there'll be less need to do all these like tricky things in a prompt or meta prompting or all this fun stuff that seems to unlock better outputs in a model, because it is a bit of a black box at times. But yeah, as we go along, I would say, you know, in a few years, prompt engineering won't be such a big deal, but in the interim, you do need to, you know, you can't wait 2 or 3 years to like get outputs, better outputs from a model. You have to learn, and you'll naturally just improve your communication skills and creative thinking by practicing prompting. Like, I think people take that for granted, that that's actually just an amazing skill to have, an ability to communicate better and have an ability to brainstorm and really think a lot deeper about problems you want to solve. So it's not just about getting an output from the model, but actually it's building those soft skills in the background by consistently working with a model.
It's interesting because prompt engineering is going to become less and less important, but you will always need to know what your goal is, what the context behind it is, what are some of the steps that you typically go through. Is always going to be useful to be able to explain, because the way that I prompt is just talking as if I'm describing or onboarding a new team member onto my team. So I find approaching it from that perspective means that you consider all of the elements that would need to be done to complete the task. But what it does is it makes you think about all of the nuances, but it also makes you more comfortable just communicating actually what you need, because, and you cover this in your course, is generally people are prompting AI models with around 9 words on average per prompt. Yeah. And if you think, if you told a person that, how they respond, they'd probably ask clarifying questions, or they would just be completely confused as to what they need to do. So I think context is really key, and also just understanding what you actually want for the model instead of expecting the model to know what you want. Just
do this, please.
Some
funny prompts, but yes, it is just, it's not magic, you know. It is like, you do still need that level of communication for sure. Thank you for mentioning the course. I mean, I've been in startups and emerging tech since, you know, 2015. I made like a AI vision vacuum robot back in the day, which was so random, but love that. But yeah, AI is just such an incredible, you know, field to be in, and it's been around since the 1960s, which is pretty wild. But I definitely feel now that, you know, AI and generative AI is more in the public eye. Even just a few years ago, AI was really only accessible to companies that had enough money to be able to fund an AI team that had, like, you know, a machine learning engineer and a data scientist and just software engineers and lots of technical people. Like, these teams would cost easily, you know, $500,000 to run each year, if not more. And then you think about the hosting infrastructure, and yeah, it was very difficult to get access to the powers of AI. But now it's very much something that anyone with a computer and, I guess, a credit card in some instances can immediately get access to. Yeah, how do you think this is going to play out in the next couple of years? How do you feel like it's gone so far, and how do you feel like it's going to play out specifically for white collar professionals?
Yeah,
it's a big question.
Yeah. I think, yeah, just to touch on what you were talking about just before I answer that question, is that was one thing I also found really interesting in the course, is it is just so powerful what we have access to now. And you use it a couple of times, you're like, and you just get used to it. But in reality, everything you talked about with the millions and billions of man hours and capital and ingenuity to go in to create these models that are just available to you for free, and or for as low as $20 a month, to be able to use this all day, every day, to be able to automate or improve the way that you think, or have access to all of humanity's knowledge across the internet at based on any question, is just staggering. And I think people often say, it's $20 a month, I can't afford that. The value of what you're getting is far outweighs that. And you mentioned earlier the $200 a week for ChatGPT Pro, which is a whole other kettle of fish. But that actually, with some of the releases that started coming out, so being able to use Sora Unlimited, which is still a model that needs improvements. But I think having unlimited access to these models is pretty insane. If you use it a lot and you can get
well, that's what I mean. Yeah, I think I laugh at it a little bit, just because I think the average person, especially where they're at, I mean, everyone falls so differently. Like, professionals that I talk to, there's such a big spectrum of where the adoption is at and understanding of these tools. Like, often it's more just getting some low-hanging fruit at the start. And yeah, as you've kind of hinted at, having that AI mindset, whenever I think of a task that I'm doing, I always think about, you know, is it going to be more efficient or better to use AI? Sometimes it isn't. And, you know, you don't want to continuously, like, overcorrect and try and fit AI into every peg hole that you possibly can. Yeah, I think for like super users, then definitely it's a good option to be there. But I mean, most people aren't even, yeah, they need to just use it more. They could be using it more. Yeah. They could be using it better. So, and that is what this podcast is all about.
Yeah. So just remind me of your question again.
Yep. How do you feel like the AI world has transformed thus far since 2020? And what do you feel like, you know, with working with this technology and people using this technology, what's the vibe?
Yeah, I think the reliability of the outputs that you can get is just going up exponentially. When I first started using ChatGPT 3.5, it just get confused. Context window is really small. So it would get things continuously. It was like an overly enthusiastic intern with a load of potential, but it would just constantly forget things like a goldfish and consistently tell me things confidently that were just completely wrong. And there was no ability to really improve that. You were really restricted by the small context window and the amount of things that it could remember at one time. I think what was a massive step change for me was when I first used Claude Opus 3. Because although it took a long time to get back to you, it really seemed to consider everything. It had a 200K context window, and I was able to add huge amounts of information in there and have it sift through and summarize it. So draw insights from things, and it just seemed to be a lot more aware. And it also seemed to be a lot more intuitive in the way that it answered things. So previously, I would have to think and specify out absolutely everything to AI models. But after using Opus, I realized it can think or proactively assume some things that I didn't mention. It's better if you do mention them, but I was able to just get a little bit more lazy with my prompting, but also just it felt like I was talking to something that was a bit more human or a bit more clued into what was going on. So every model that launches, I get a little bit of a, obviously I get excited, but also I just notice a little bit more of how useful this can be to my day-to-day life.
Yeah, I do feel like some, 3.5 may have put some people off. Like, I do feel like sometimes, you know, it's like there's this picture of someone digging in a mine, and then there's like the diamonds are just, they're right there, but then they get to this point and they go, I'm too tired, I'm gonna go back. There's definitely that disillusionment, I find, because when you have these product launches as well, like, I mean, the companies that are launching these products sometimes just, I feel like they launch because they need to stay in the news cycle. And, you know, every time someone has a bad experience with an AI model output, it's like they're less likely to keep going and to keep trying different prompts. They just go, oh, that's like, you know, maybe their prompt wasn't great. So they're like, oh, that was just a shit model. So, or the AI is not that great, you know, and then they stop trying when they, you know, my output's probably, and your output's probably way different to the average person, just because we've finessed the way that we interact with models, because we saw the potential. Even like, yeah, GPT-2 was kind of hilarious, but yeah, it's just that faith. And I could just see, wow, this is just going to keep improving, and I need to be just experimenting as much as I possibly can, which is kind of why I got into this space. But yeah, I'm definitely an advocate massively, but it is like trying to get people back in when maybe they had a bad experience with a model or with a prompt, and they just go, oh, guys, but it's not even that good, man, you know. Like, you're so wrong.
Yeah, I think we're still recovering from the earlier models, because I think people jumped in, used it, got poor results, and then I didn't touch it for a long time. So I was talking to some of my clients about the way that they've approached it, and some of them had spent, and I was really impressed by this, because most of the time people try it a couple of times and just give up. But
totally.
One of my clients had spent about 2 days trying to get a use case to work. And
yeah, right.
He was so frustrated that he'd gone through all that effort and just couldn't get it to work.
Totally.
But in the end, it was just because he was using more of a primitive model because he didn't have access to it into anything more internally because of all the restrictions that enterprise companies have.
For sure. Yeah, that's a big issue. Which will just be an issue in general. I'm actually pretty amazed at how even the, you know, proprietary and closed source models, the government hasn't intervened like too much. So, and I've even, said this and some of my colleagues also agree that it is crazy that you can just access like open source public models and just download them. Like I have a hard drive full of all the models I've downloaded because you just don't know, like, is that access going to be forever? Is there going to be some sort of, you know, political movement that kind of shuts this down when things start getting scary in terms of, you know, agent capabilities? I feel like almost like the AI capabilities still developing to a point where the extreme red panic button hasn't been hit just yet with politics, but I think something like autonomous agents, I think something will happen next year that will freak everyone out, to be honest. I don't know what it is, but I just from historical trends in technology, it'd be interesting.
Yeah, and seeing how quickly the technology is getting better, and we haven't had a big leap in a while, so it will be interesting to see what happens next year. I had something else I wanted to mention. Yeah, the open source model element is really exciting for me, and something that I got a lot of value out of your course was because I'd always wanted to use open source models. I'd always known they're a bit more primitive compared to some of the frontier models, but learning how to actually set that up on device so that I can use it for any use case unlimited to explain for those who aren't using open source models. It's basically a completely localized, if you like, to set it up on your computer. So anything you feed into there is never going anywhere else, and it's safe on your device. Yeah. So having access to that is hugely valuable for preparing your data to be safe, feed into more sophisticated models, and just having unlimited access without needing to pay with API credits or need a subscription is pretty incredible. And I think having that open source as a part of your workflow is a really great opportunity for a lot of people, particularly for those who their company has mandated you can't use AI. Totally. You are not allowed to use ChatGPT. You can't feed in any information, or sometimes, very often for companies, it's a gray area. So they don't know what data they are and aren't allowed to feed into the model.
Sure.
They haven't been properly trained or educated on that. And there's particularly my customers that marketers are just concerned that they don't want to feed in customer information for the risk of something being leaked or that being used in training data sets. And I think having a safe open source model where you can just play around with it and see what happens, and particularly with Llama 3.2 that just came out, it's pretty close to...
Yeah, it's benchmarking pretty high. I mean, Claude still... But, you know, probably benchmarking at GPT-4.
Yeah.
GPT-4, probably. Yeah.
Yeah, which is just...
Which is great.
To have that on your device for free.
It's
checking to see if you have personally identifiable information in the stuff that you might want to feed into the frontier model, or just cleaning things up and formatting them. That's what I'm doing a lot of the time, is just restructuring data or summarizing things so I can feed in more relevant information into the model, the frontier model that I'm using.
Good old Zuck.
Yeah.
Finally, he came back after all the terrible things.
Yeah, it's good on trusting, but...
No, not really, but have to give him ups because he's funneling all of that evil money into now giving something back to the people, a free AI model that's benchmarking pretty high. So,
yeah,
love it. What is your controversial opinion about AI and emerging tech?
I guess I just challenge people with basically what we've been talking about before, is there's a lot of people afraid to use these models for whatever reason, whether it's, I don't know how to use it, I'm not technical, my company doesn't let me use it, I don't know what data I can and can't feed into the model. The reality is all of this stuff can be learnt and solved through trial and error, but also chatting to people like us who have tried and tested different things. Is I think the perception is that AI can be too hard basket, and sometimes it's not worth, maybe if it doesn't work the first time, it's a waste of time, or I can't use it at all. There's ways around it that can be safe and also help you become more productive. So I think people are shooting themselves in the foot when they're seeing all of the barriers for them using AI and not considering that there are some easy workarounds. And through a bit of time using the models and having some experience with it, doing a little bit of research, signing up to the right newsletters, or talking to people about how you're using it, I think the communication and learning that is available on the internet, or even talking to AI models themselves to find out what is right and what is wrong, is going to be super valuable for people. So I just encourage everyone to jump in and start using this stuff a little bit per day. I mean, the ideal is an AI first mindset. So you've touched on this, and many marketers that I've spoke to who have been using this stuff successfully have found that before you do any task, instead of going to a Google search bar, or instead of going to back to the old ways that you used to do things, think, how could I go to AI first, or consider what it could do to improve or speed up the way that I do this? So you can start to build these systems and these workflows yourself, but also start sharing that with your team. When you find things that work, when you've had things that didn't work, sharing those in a Slack channel within your company, or just opening up the conversation, can really help you learn a lot quicker. And in the end, it's going to be the 50-second version of what you're doing that's actually going to be dramatically better than what you were doing before. But you need to spend a bit of that time experimenting. And I'd also touch on that it's very hard to say to people, particularly professionals, which we're both talking to, is they often don't have time to experiment like maybe you and I do. So what I'd say to that is it's about prioritizing a little bit of experimentation every day to show that you can start to make a better result, but also proving and using the AI tools to actually improve the result that you're getting, not just save time. Because as soon as you can say, for instance, I sent this email that we used, the strategy was informed by using an AI model based on our key pain points that our customers were saying versus one that we sent before, or one that was then doing an A-B test and seeing how much is this actually resonating, and also how much time did you save producing that email as well. So it's building a system for tracking the results versus just blindly trying things in ChatGPT, feeling like they don't work and just leaving them alone. It's documenting what has worked, what hasn't, and sharing that throughout your team.
Yeah, okay. I think that's good, because I was just going to say it would be good to cover, you know, some quick ways that people can start to improve their workflows and what they're doing with models. Like, I definitely say try a couple of different models. Even just using Claude instead of ChatGPT can elevate people's outputs. Even that, just like changing models is like a quick win. Or even, you know, a lot of people's prompts are just like 9 words long, which is insane, because there's just not enough context to get and instructions to get the right output out of the model. So even like another quick win is to do like something called meta prompting, which is essentially you're just saying to the model, I want to achieve this task, ask me questions about the task, and that it just helps a lot with context building. It may not necessarily improve some elements of the output, because there's some other prompting type things that you might need to do for that, which you cover, I think, in your Marketing Insider. But yes, even that, just saying and it just helps as an exercise to start being more specific and building out prompts, because that's a major issue. People just aren't putting enough context and just aren't putting enough information into the prompts. So it just helps you, gives you some little training wheels for the building prompts as well, if you don't know where to start, because often that can be the issue too. Like, you just don't know what you don't know, the old adage. So yeah, that can help quite a bit.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And meta prompting has been very useful for me, because it's like I have a partner to help coax the information out of me that I might need to be able to get that done. So adding a quick line at the end of your prompt to say, if there's anything that's unclear, ask clarifying questions. And then answering those questions and turning it into a conversation back and forth. But I think ultimately the biggest step for me is just that I'd recommend to people is just starting small and testing little things here and there and seeing what works, documenting those results, and then using public data first, because that's safe. So grabbing articles that cover information that you're interested in or that you're trying to communicate, or YouTube transcripts is another great way. So people could turn this podcast into a summary, but also a way to inform and fine tune the way that the model behaves based on having that information. So I think the key thing for me is, I'll talk through this more in a structured process, is, like I mentioned before, the best way to prompt or work with an AI model is to consider it as a new member of your team who was just joined, who has no context. If you were just started at a job and someone just drops a vague task on your desk with zero context, like if someone were to come up and ask you to write a blog post without actually specifying what your brand is, what your goals are, why your audience would care about it, it's not going to get a good result. So I think trying to improve the length of your prompts by giving more information is going to be the biggest hack that people need to get started with. And that's why when I'm teaching marketers how to prompt AI models, when often they'll say, I get generic results when I use AI models. And the answer to that is you're just not getting in enough information. You haven't specified the task, what needs to be done, and you haven't given it some of the frameworks or information that you have as a professional, as a marketer, to be able to get that job done. So explaining your goal, who it's for, what actually needs doing, why it matters for you, giving it key frameworks. So as a marketer, you understand ways of getting better results, and you know what kind of copy resonates. You know what kind of you could use experts, books or podcasts on how to apply marketing best practice to better inform that. So I think as soon as I discovered that frameworks can help the model think in a way that's going to be more intelligent and more productive, that's the interesting thing about AI models, is you can instantly turn learning into action or ideas based on a huge amount of information that you can feed to it. So I think outside of feeding frameworks, it's also about thinking how you can give all the context you need. So a hack that I use is just recording myself talking about a problem or a task that needs to be done for 30 seconds to 2 minutes, using a tool like Super Whisper, which can instantly transcribe all of the text. So you don't come across that barrier of needing to type things into the model every time. You can just lay it all in there
and keep that as well. You know, it's just like about building that data store that you can refer to, because it's I think the common misconception is that you can put in this really short prompt and then the AI model is just like fucking magic basically, and also knows your tone of voice even though it has no data training on you specifically whatsoever. And having that expectation and then getting these generic responses, or a response is in a tone that you're just like, why is it speaking like this? But it's literally just because it doesn't have the right training data that you specifically, you know, that that is personalized and specific to you. So that's probably just a key point to stress, that it does actually take time and effort to get good outputs. And to that example of taking 2 days, it may not necessarily take that long, but what you will find is at first, when you're building up specific data sets, like as you said, it might be voice recordings or it might be, you know, data from other sources that are kind of building this marketing brain if you're using it for marketing. That can take a bit of time in the front, in like, you know, you're kind of front loading that time with the AI model. But if you spend that time, it's kind of like the 10,000 thing, you know what I mean? Like you have to spend that time at the front, but then you'll get the reward and the outcomes that you want in the longer term. But if you take that kind of short-term mindset of not putting in that much effort, thinking it's going to just magically know exactly the kind of outputs that you need, I mean, maybe in the future, that's, I guess, the concept of AGI, but even then, it would still need the right context and the right framework of what you're ideally wanting to output, because everyone's so unique. Every human being is so unique. Every company is so unique in their brand and their tone. So it's very unreasonable to expect that the AI will know immediately what you're trying to achieve. You can get it to achieve really amazing things, but there is time and effort. I'm sorry to tell everyone that, yes, there will be time and effort, but it's time and effort well spent and will set you up for your career in the years to come too. Yeah.
And I think the way that I've approached it is realizing that what you said is the result that you get from an AI model is everything that you feed into it. So make sure that you're collecting everything you could possibly need and storing that all in a place that's going to be quick and easy to access.
Yeah. Actually, I did want to very quickly mention, so simtheory.ai is essentially like a model aggregator / agent platform. And they have a function where you can actually screen record while you're working. So it actually gathers context through that way, which I think is also a very effective, efficient way to do data gathering in addition to whatever data you deem relevant, and assuming that it's all nice and clean and structured for the models, which is a whole other thing. But yeah, that is a cool tool that I use to be able to basically get that context, because that's also a key differentiator between, you know, having a good prompt and not, is having that additional context in the model.
Mm. Yeah, that's really awesome. Yeah, I'd love to give something like that a go. I think I've gone about it in a more manual and slightly automated process where I copy and paste a lot of text from websites, YouTube transcripts, competitors' websites, G2 reviews, using a web page to text Chrome extension, and that is all stored within Notion pages, which I keep under toggles that are sorted into different topics and areas, so that I have that information on hand so that I can copy and paste that into a model when I need it. But to take that a step further is, once I understand the use case for that knowledge and that I'm going to be using that repetitively, I put it into a text snippet tool. So something like Text Expander, or you can use, what's it called? Text Expander or TextBlaze is another option as well. But there's lots of platforms that do this. But what is really valuable about that is not only can you feed in context. So if I have a book or a podcast that was talking about a particular area, or an article that explains exactly how to do something, just being able to type a quick code, a three character code, into any text box and just add that right into the model instantly has been a game changer for me. So using that in combination with speaking your prompts and having all of that context in there, it can you can add in templates for prompts that have worked before, then fill in that information with your voice. But what is so powerful about that is it reduces the laziness that most people have when they're prompting. So I can't be bothered to write a
it's the constant combat of laziness. I know. Yeah.
So just being able to throw that into the model, and particularly for things like a chain of thought prompt. So what I call think, which is getting the model to reason through steps before it answers and just blurts out the first answer. So things like take a deep breath, think through a problem step by step, or before drafting a response, think through in a scratch pad.
Yeah.
Just
surprisingly effective. So you wouldn't think so. You'd be like, that's not real. That doesn't make any impact. But weird tips and tricks that do work. Yeah.
And just having that on hand, being able to put that in, I throw that in pretty much every prompt that I do, just to remind it to think in that way. And the results can get so much better. So building up those things that work well for you is really valuable.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, there's some one-liners you can just chuck in and it immediately kind of elevates the model. So yeah, I'm hoping that that will basically be inbuilt into kind of the back end of these models, because, you know, theoretically the AI model teams have this aggregate of all these prompts that they've ever seen from users and can pick out, you know, things that are working, because they don't even know necessarily what's going to get the best out of a model too. They do, because, you know, they know to a certain point, but there's a level of unpredictability with all models because they are, yes, stochastic models, meaning they're non-deterministic. So even the OpenAI team can't fully predict everything that's going to happen with the models. So
yeah,
there is a lot of trial and error, but it's exciting because, you know, you're hunting for treasure sometimes with AI models, but it's definitely worth the attempt. But thank you so much, Will. This has been, what a great chat. I didn't expect us to talk for an hour, but here we are. Hopefully this has been valuable for white collar professionals, all my knowledge workers out there, are kind of non-coders wanting to get up to speed with AI and feel a bit more confident and less anxious about where we're going. But I would say right now, the only thing that you should be anxious about is anxious with excitement, because there's so many cool things you can do with the models. We're not really close at all to full automation of jobs. It's really just a positive tool. But there is the phrase, you know, AI won't replace you, but people who know how to use AI will. So not that I'm a very positive person. I don't want to fearmonger or anything. And this is a anti-anxiety podcast, but it is worth saying that you'll get a lot more. It's actually fun. It's fun to use AI when it works, because it just means that, like, you can think of ideas that you wouldn't have thought of before. It's like a little partner in crime. Like, I love using it from that point of view, and just meaning that I don't have to do some administrative tasks that I really hate, which has improved my quality of life. I definitely, you know, things that used to take me days take me half an hour, you know, maybe an hour, which I'll cover in other podcasts in the future too. But yeah, I think it's really exciting. I don't think it's near, you know, disrupting jobs just yet. And potentially some, but there's not really this kind of like full end-to-end, you know, employees that are functioning yet. But there's so much good stuff that people are missing out on, I think. And I have full faith and hope that all this stuff can be taught. It's just finding that information and having an open mind. And yeah, as you said, the AI first mindset of like programming your brain to look for opportunities of where to incorporate AI and just play with it a bit more and have a bit more of an open, excited mind versus, you know, this isn't giving me the thing that I want, or like it wasn't perfect straight away, therefore it's useless, you know.
Yeah, and I think what's really exciting about AI is that there are practical use cases that you can use for it now. We've been hearing for the last 2 or 3 years that AI is going to change our life and AI is going to take our jobs and AI is going to do all this stuff that is pretty far-fetched. I think the focus should be on how can I use this technology today to give me an advantage in my career to my business. So what steps can I start to automate? How can I use it to help me think more clearly or access information more quickly, or use it as a brainstorming partner, but also use it as a way to enhance the way that you do your work and augment it and enhance the way that you approach problems and the way that you approach your work. I think the shift now is AI has gone from a whole lot of hype and we're all sick of hearing it to something that is going to be actually, that already is incredibly useful for all of us. So I'd encourage everyone to just jump in, learn as much as you can, because like you said, don't worry about it taking your job, because if you're the one who is focusing on learning this stuff every day in the way that you do your work, you will be the one that will have the best kind of opportunities in the future. And as soon as it becomes something that you're afraid of, you're shooting yourself in the foot. Obviously, you need to be considerate of what these models could change in society and how to use it safely. But by using these models, you're learning to understand them better. So you're much better prepared for the future.
Definitely.
And it can definitely be a fun and it's been probably one of the highlights of my life, being able to use this technology every day.
As
a solo founder, being able to go back and forth and have a brainstorming partner or a support whenever I need it has insane.
Definitely. Yay. Awesome. Yeah. And that's it for the first episode.
What are we saying to each other?
Seems I'm trying to teach you some basic tonal vocabulary.
It's the first day of school, fellas.